dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as a war for the free world. On the domestic side of that war is a very important constitutional principle, namely the rule of law and the character of the republic that is rooted in that principle. It is under assault. I think it's no secret, certainly to this audience, that the Obama administration has adopted a practice of lawlessness and presidential authority, often guised in the form of sort of what's called, I guess, a prosecutorial discretion that allows the selective enforcement of the law that is incredibly corrosive to the standard that all of us are expected to conform to. To discuss those issues and much more with us, I'm very pleased to say, is a woman who has served for over a decade in the Department of Justice and who has practiced, as a result, law enforcement at the highest level for years and has been, since she left the department in 1988, a very successful attorney practicing law in the private sector in the federal appellate courts. Her name is Sidney Powell, and she joins us for a full hour to discuss an important new book she has just published entitled Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. Sidney Powell, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. Congratulations on your new book, and thank you for your service to our country, both in the Department of Justice itself and that you're rendering now in exposing some of its serious problems.
No, thank you, Frank. It's my honor to be with you.
I'd like to start, if I may, in this segment, and we are very pleased to be able to drill down at some length on the various aspects of the revelations that you have about corruption in the Department of Justice under Eric Holder specifically, by sort of calibrating on the nature of the Obama-Holder Justice Department. Maybe starting with Eric Holder, where he's come from, the kind of people that he's populated his organization with, and the kind of agenda that they're pursuing.
Well, Mr. Holder came from a very powerful Washington law firm. He's been in Washington a very long time and certainly knows his way around politics. He was the Assistant Attorney General in the department under Janet Reno and basically took over the department in her stead when she became ill. She had been appointing special prosecutors to look into different issues, but Mr. Holder ended that practice when he took over. And he has made the Department of Justice the most politicized it has ever been, at least in my 30-some years of experience in the legal world.
And when you say politicized, that obviously can take a number of different forms. Maybe we could start with some of the personnel.
Yes, and using it as a tool to accomplish political goals instead of enforcing the rule of law equally and across the board without respect to any sort of political or personal agenda.
Yeah. When you look at the people that he has put into senior positions of this department, it is pretty clear that many of them bring with them a political agenda similar to that you've just described. We're familiar particularly with what's been called the Gitmo Bar tapes, who have populated a number of key positions in this Department of Justice bureaucracy. But give us a sense of the kinds of people that you would, you know, be concerned may not have the rule of law first and foremost in their minds as they perform their duties.
Well, the thing that particularly concerns me is his determination to protect prosecutors who have broken ethical rules and legal rules and ignored their constitutional duty to provide exculpatory evidence to the defense. An organization called the Project on Government Oversight, which is nonprofit, bipartisan, came out with a report about 6 weeks ago identifying over 400 instances of prosecutorial misconduct by Justice Department lawyers in the last decade, a number of them during the Holder administration. The department itself has verified any number of those violations, and Mr. Holder refuses even to release the names of the prosecutors or identify the cases in which the misconduct occurred. So there's no transparency whatsoever. Meanwhile, the Department of Justice is circling the wagon to protect these people. I mean, this is a man who came into office riding a white horse and running out to dismiss the indictment against Senator Ted Stevens, the longest-serving Republican in the United States Senate, who had been convicted in a corrupt prosecution by, ironically, the Public Integrity Section of the Department of Justice. And so Holder swoops in at the last minute, proclaims he's dismissing the Stevens indictment in the interest of justice and that he's going to clean up the department. All the national press eats that up, even NPR, and proclaims how wonderful this is. You know, we're going to restore integrity to the Department of Justice. And instead, he's protecting all the corrupt prosecutors.
Yeah. Sidney Powell is our guest. She is a former federal prosecutor herself, an assistant U.S. attorney for the Western and Northern Districts of Texas, and also the Eastern District of Virginia. And as I understand it, Sidney, you've served under a number of U.S. attorneys, nine of them, I believe you've said, under both Republican and Democratic appointments. To the extent that this is sort of endemic now in the Department of Justice, this kind of, protecting of their own at the expense of the rule of law. I just want to come back to the extent to which this is being directed by, Holder himself or emanating really from the president. And maybe you could just talk a little bit about some of the individuals that you have had personal experience with in terms of corrupt prosecutorial practices who have served at the highest levels of the Obama White House, to say nothing of the Justice Department.
Yes, certainly. The president's longest-serving chief White House counsel, Catherine Rumler, was co-lead prosecutor in the Merrill Lynch Enron prosecution as part of the Enron task force. She actually yellow highlighted evidence in that case that was favorable to the defense. The task force prosecution team was told to provide the judge evidence which they believed led to exculpatory evidence for the defendants, evidence that favored the defense or would impeach the witnesses of the prosecution or might mitigate the punishment against the defendants. Pages of transcripts and notes and reports and statements of key witnesses that they knew helped the four Merrill Lynch defendants and two other defendants as well in the case. And yellow highlighted some of the key statements that directly contradicted their witnesses. Meanwhile, instead of producing that evidence directly, the judge allowed them to produce only summaries, as Judge Sullivan had done in the Stevens prosecution, which I don't think he'll ever do again. And those summaries turned out to be false and misleading. Ms. Rumler herself signed the letter to the defendants that was false and misleading in terms of not giving the defendants the true evidence that they were withholding. And that led to the conviction and imprisonment of four Merrill Lynch executives on an indictment that didn't even state a criminal offense. We could not get the defendants so much as bail pending their appeals being decided. So the time they served in prison was while we were trying to get an appeal heard, because according to Ms. Rumler and Matthew Friedrich and Andrew Weissman, there was no substantial issue for appeal. Even though the prosecution was completely unprecedented, there was not a single other case from any court in the country that supported that prosecution. Nothing like it on the facts, because the defendants had not taken a dime from anybody, and Merrill Lynch had made, I think, $775,000, and Enron actually made $53 million on the transaction. Nobody had stolen any money from anyone.
We have to pause for just a moment, Sidney Powell, and when we come back, I want to drill down on Ms. Rumler and others who have been in the president's closest circle, who, as you say, have been effectively promoted for misconduct. It's scandalous, and I think it suggests a piece of what's been wrong under this administration in terms of enforcing the rule of law. That and more with Sidney Powell, the author of Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hello, I'm Gary Sinise. It's been 20 years since Forrest Gump, and the story of Lieutenant Dan's triumphant return to normalcy is still a part of my life. I'm honored to share it with the real-life Lieutenant Dan's living among us, the more than 1,700 battle-injured amputees that have returned home since 9/11. As citizens, it's our duty to ensure these heroes get the care they need. Join the Gary Sinise Foundation and help support America's wounded heroes. Visit GarySiniseFoundation.org.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them.
When you make fun of them.
When you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around. And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of
candor, intelligence, and goodwill
is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent talk.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there. America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps gunnery sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back visiting for a special program of Secure Freedom Radio with Sydney Powell. She is a former assistant U.S. attorney in three different districts. She has been very active for many years since leaving federal government service, indeed involved in some 500 cases at the federal appellate court level. She is considered by many of her peers as a super lawyer, and she is also the author of Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. Sydney, we were talking before the break a little bit about the sort of individuals and conduct of them. I'd like to just ask you, you've written an interesting piece in the New York Observer recently about the president's muses, as you put them. Talk a little bit about, in addition to Ms. Rumler, several of the other characters who figure prominently in your story.
Certainly. The president has promoted to the highest positions what I call the corrupt cabal of Enron task force prosecutors who hid evidence, overreached in any number of ways, cobbled together parts of different indictments. And one of those is Lisa Monaco, who worked on the Enron broadband prosecution that was plagued with allegations of misconduct. She is his counterterrorism advisor. Of course, Catherine Rumler, that I just mentioned, was his longest-serving White House counsel. And then also in the picture that struck me with the title, All the President's Muses, is also Susan Rice, his national security advisor. So I'm very concerned that Mr. Obama chose to take his most important advice from people with a history of prosecutorial overreaching, cover-up, and various forms of misconduct.
Yeah. And Susan Rice wouldn't necessarily fall into that category, but she has her own problems with the truth. We've all witnessed that in connection with both, of course, the Benghazi affair and the Bergdahl business. But this really speaks to a matter of public trust on the part of all of these individuals. And it really is of grave concern to the extent that they are making national policy or supposedly enforcing the law. Sydney Powell is our guest. We're talking about her new book, Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. Sydney, one other individual you feature is a woman by the name of Leslie Caldwell, who is now the Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division. Talk a little bit about her background and how she fits into this larger narrative.
Ms. Caldwell was the first director of the Enron task force. She was chosen for that position because she was known as a terror of a prosecutor, which isn't the quality I would seek in a prosecutor. I would think we would be better off with prosecutors who are as fair and objective as humanly possible. But Ms. Caldwell, the terror of a prosecutor, now heads the entire criminal division of the Department of Justice without any mention in her confirmation hearings, as best I can tell, or in the major press, of the fact that she led the destruction of Arthur Anderson and its 85,000 jobs, only to be reversed after she left the task force, 9-0 by the United States Supreme Court, because the charges they cobbled against Anderson gave Anderson no fair warning that their conduct was criminal. In fact, the indictment didn't allege a crime on its facts. And the jury instructions had been stripped of any sort of criminal intent. Justice Rehnquist, writing for the unanimous Supreme Court, said it was shocking how little culpability the instructions required. So basically, 85,000 jobs destroyed for nothing. That is not the sort of judgment I would want being exercised by anyone who headed the criminal division of the Department of Justice.
Yeah, you talk in the book about these prosecutors essentially putting, you know, good press notices ahead of fairness in their prosecutions. A particularly egregious example of this, of course, was the persecution is probably a more accurate term of it, of Senator Stevens that you referred to earlier. But we are witnessing, of course, under Ms. Caldwell, the prosecution of a number of major, at the moment, principally foreign banks. Credit Suisse recently had a $2+ billion settlement. BNP Paribas just recently, some $9 billion. And I want to talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But just basically this the question occurs, is in fact what's going on here, in your judgment, the faithful enforcement of the law, or is this the sort of terrorist prosecutorial technique that you've witnessed be abused in the past?
I'm sure there is the terrorist use of the prosecution. There's no doubt about that. The problem with the way they're doing these things is that no one can tell if there's actually criminal misconduct, because it's all done under such threat of severe penalties, like the destruction of a business, the fate of Arthur Anderson, that we don't know what the facts are until somebody actually forces it to trial. And even then, we can't rely on whether we're getting all the facts, because with these people in charge, they hid the evidence. Rumler, Friedrich, Weissman and company hid the evidence for over 6 years in the Merrill Lynch case. So when you have people in charge that are known for their overreaching in different ways, whether it be charging or criminalizing things that aren't criminal or hiding evidence or any of those forms of prosecutorial misconduct, you don't know that the trial is fair.
Speak a little bit about this. This gets perhaps a little arcane, but I hope you can take this from, you know, the lawyer's jargon and realm into that of the layman, the layperson. Talk a little bit about the Brady rule and why it is really central to a fair prosecution.
Having evidence that's favorable to the defense, the prosecutor's obligation to disclose evidence that is favorable to the defense, is a cornerstone of our democracy. As Judge Alex Kaczynski explains in the foreword to License to Lie, which he wrote in his personal capacity, it's the prosecutor who controls everything from the investigation, the beginning of the investigation forward. They're the ones that have first access to the evidence. When they go into a company, they seize all the documents and records and computers and take it from the defense. In the Enron Broadband case, for example, the prosecution took the defendant's hard drives that had evidence of the Enron Broadband system they were developing on it, did their own analysis of that, and then destroyed the hard drive so the defendants couldn't have access to it to find the software that they knew was there. So unless the prosecutors are fair, and the Supreme Court, the ethical rules, the walls of the Hall of Justice themselves say that the job of the United States attorney is to seek justice, that his job is not to obtain convictions, but to seek justice, even if that means a guilty person goes free. Because it's better to allow a guilty person to go free than to convict an innocent man. And right now we have innocent people in prison everywhere because prosecutors have not been fair.
Yeah, and in some cases, as we were talking about earlier, prosecutors that have engaged in unfair and indeed improper conduct have actually been promoted and put in a position where they can do even more damage, which is absolutely scandalous. And this will bring us back to, in our next block, this larger question of the rule of law and what's at stake here. Sidney Powell will be addressing that and other topics with us as we continue our special hour-long broadcast on her new book, Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. Right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The term invasion is increasingly used to describe what is happening along America's southern border. By some estimates, over 50,000 so-called unaccompanied minors have already illegally crossed into our country. In fact, many of the invaders are not actually children. None is actually unaccompanied. They are brought in by smugglers. Virtually all expect Team Obama will allow them to stay, and many more are on their way. In addition, some of these invaders are sick. Among their rumored illnesses are not just flesh-eating mites known as scabies, but potentially deadly diseases. These reportedly include tuberculosis, chickenpox, H1N1 flu, and shivering diseases, which may include hemorrhagic fever. America's public safety is at risk. This is not a humanitarian crisis to be managed. It is a dangerous invasion that must be repulsed. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're in our third segment of a special hour-long broadcast on a marvelous new book written by Sidney Powell. It's entitled Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. It is informed by her personal experience in the Department of Justice from 1978 to 1988, as well as the experiences that she has had as a defense lawyer at the appellate courts level in the federal system, involving some 500 different cases. She knows her stuff, and she tells her story very powerfully in her book, License to Lie. Sidney, welcome back. It's great having a chance to visit with you at some length about all of this. I'd like to ask you to address a term that I think probably until the Obama administration, very few of us outside of the legal business had ever heard of. But what does prosecutorial discretion mean, at least as traditionally defined, and how is it being practiced under this administration?
Well, as traditionally defined, it is extremely broad. There's a famous speech by Robert H. Jackson as Attorney General of the United States that he gave to all the U.S. attorneys from around the country back in 1940, and his words have basically been enshrined. I used to keep the speech posted in my office. He said the prosecutor has more control over life, liberty, and reputation than any other person in America. His discretion is tremendous. He can have citizens investigated, and if he is that kind of person, he can have this done to the tune of public statements and veiled or unveiled intimidations. Or he can choose a more of his one-sided presentation of the facts, can cause a citizen to be indicted and held for trial. He may dismiss the case before trial, in which he heard, or he may go on with a public trial if he obtains a conviction. The prosecutor can still make a recommendation as to sentence, as to whether the prisoner should get probation or a suspended sentence, and after he's put away, as to whether he's a fit subject for parole. While the prosecutor at his best is one of the most beneficent forces in our society, when he acts from malice or other base motives, he is one of the worst. And in this, in modern day times, the prosecutor also has extreme discretion over where the person is incarcerated and how he is treated when he is incarcerated, which the Department of Justice refuses to acknowledge, but we saw that firsthand in the Merrill Lynch case.
As I understand it, and I think what you've described there is the power of the prosecution, but the idea that selective prosecution or prosecutorial discretion, I guess, is in practice under the Obama administration being used to basically translate into the selective enforcement of the laws of this country, contrary to the oaths of office that the president and Eric Holder and U.S. attorneys and other prosecutors have taken. Describe, if you would, how that works in practice and what the implications of it might be.
Well, the prosecutor can choose his defendants just as much as he can choose his cases. And even as Jackson said, therein lies the most dangerous power of the prosecutor, that he can pick the people he thinks he should get rather than pick the cases that need to be prosecuted. So instead of actually looking for crimes or knowing that there are crimes out there that need to be prosecuted, they're choosing defendants and then finding something in the law to pin on them, which is one of the worst abuses of prosecutorial discretion and, frankly, puts everyone in the country at risk.
I guess I'm working on a different line here, and I just want to try to see if I can't develop it a little bit more fully with you. I get that there is a degree of prosecutorial discretion that translates into the abusive pursuit and punishment, for that matter, even without, you know, the courts properly considering the case of some defendants. What I'm interested in as well is kind of the flip side, that when the government of the United States, when the president, the Holder Justice Department most especially, says, you know, we're not going to enforce the law when it comes to, for example, the Black Panthers engaging in, you know, electoral violations, or we're not going to enforce the law when it comes to the defense of marriage, or we're not going to enforce the law when it comes to immigration laws, or we're not going to enforce the law when it comes to, you know, the Obamacare statutes. These seem to me to be things that are at least as corrosive to the rule of law as prosecutorial misconduct.
Oh yes, definitely. The selective enforcement of the law in either direction is a huge problem. I mean, if we don't have equal enforcement of the law, we don't have law at all. We have a president who's acting as an imperial president, choosing what he's going to enforce when and where. And so there's no certainty for business. There's no certainty for individuals. There's no protection for the country.
That's really the crux of the matter, I think, Sidney Powell, that we're looking at a corrosion of the rule of law in both regards, selective enforcement meaning abuses of defendants, and selective enforcement meaning simply undermining the application of the law equally and fairly to all. And this, I guess, goes to the point of something you talk about in the book and the title of it, the corruption of the Justice Department. Is what's going on here, in your judgment, literally, you know, old-fashioned corruption where people are personally benefiting either financially or in terms of career advancement or in some other fashion from misconduct? Or is this something broader in the service of a political agenda?
I think it's broader. I think it is moral and ideological corruption. the absence of intellectual integrity and a willingness to seek the truth with honor and character and integrity, as opposed to just trying to accomplish a means by whatever ends are necessary to accomplish it.
And to the extent that's what's going on here, in your judgment, as a former federal prosecutor yourself, could this be happening without direction from higher authorities, either within the department itself or in the White House? Is this something that individual prosecutors are simply rogue agents and they're engaging in misconduct without the knowledge or assent or protection, more to the point, of their superiors?
This kind of corruption has to come from the top down. These people are at a very high level. They're taking the approach the president and the attorney general want them to take. We're not talking about the line assistant U.S. attorneys who are out there prosecuting actual crime. We're talking about people who are instituting and committing to an ideology and using the law and their power to enforce or not enforce whatever they choose to do in support of their own agenda and ideology. That is a serious corruption of the law and puts every citizen in the country in some form of danger.
And particularly, I think the message can't be lost on people that as others in the system see individuals who engage in this kind of conduct, notwithstanding being called out on it by courts, including the Supreme Court in one instance, nonetheless being promoted, ascending on up the ranks, it can only be demoralizing on the one hand and an inducement to engage in some of the same kind of misconduct themselves. Very troubling assessment of an institution that is, as you say, Sidney Powell, at the very heart of the fabric of a rule of law, rooted republic such as ours. We're going to pause for just one more break. Sidney Powell has joined us for this full hour, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with the author of Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice, about how some of these practices are now possibly translating into the empowering of enemies, as well as people who have some ethical challenges and are nonetheless working for the government of the United States.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I lost my arm.
I lost my legs.
But you can't see what I lost. Over 625,000 vets are suffering from traumatic brain injury
and post-traumatic stress. They're the wounds you can't see.
But with your help, we can expose the invisible wounds of war.
And get these veterans the help they desperately need.
100% of your donation goes toward building treatment centers. Help heal the invisible wounds of war. Donate at makeitvisible.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're visiting with Sidney Powell. She is a career legal professional, having served in the United States government's Department of Justice from 1978 to 1988, and in the intervening period as a practitioner at the highest level of the criminal defense bar. She has some 500 cases at the federal appellate level to her credit. She is a super lawyer in the estimation of many of her peers, and the author of Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. Sidney, I want to come to what do we do about all this in a moment, but very quickly, two pieces that I just would like to get your thoughts on, if I may. One is our friend and one of your former colleagues in the Department of Justice, Andy McCarthy, has raised a warning about the
degree to which we are now witnessing the United States government pursue the prosecution in civilian courts of this terrorist by the name of Abu Qatala, who was picked up in Benghazi in connection with the attack there on September 11th, 2012. And he raises the warning that we may well find, under the administration's ideologically motivated agenda here, this gentleman, and I use that term advisedly, allowed to lawyer up relatively quickly, long before he's been fully debriefed, interrogated, and his intelligence value fully exploited, and thereby put in a position where he's able to get intelligence information from us in the discovery process, assuming, you know, the Brady law is, or Brady rule rather, is faithfully applied, rather than us getting intelligence information from him. Is that a concern that you share?
Yes, I think it's a concern to everyone. I mean, we need to be particularly careful how we handle any sort of terrorist case, and it is important to get intelligence information from terrorists at the earliest possible time and be able to protect, use that information to protect Americans. I'm sure that once he was brought into this country, however, he was treated as any American would be treated, despite the fact he is not. So
it's this imbuing him with all kinds of rights that American citizens have is a mystery to me, I must say, as a layman. Let me turn to one other thing that we touched on a moment ago, Sidney Powell, and that is the selective enforcement of the law with respect to immigration. You expressed concern about border insecurity. I feel that very strongly as well. And the Holder Justice Department is nowhere to be seen at this point, as best I can tell, in terms of the various laws that are being, well, honored in the breach, I guess is a way of putting it, by the rest of the government. What do you make of this? And again, what are the implications for the country?
I think the implications are extremely serious, Frank. The Border Patrol agents are absolutely overwhelmed with what they're dealing with and this influx of children. We've got everything from sick children coming in to create one crisis after the other. My big concern is that while the Border Patrol agents are distracted by changing diapers and babysitting, that increased drugs are coming into the country. It basically opens the border for everything else. We don't know what terrorists are simply walking across the border while the Border Patrol agents are distracted by all the children.
As you've spent a long time in the federal judicial system in Texas, I know that this is a particularly troubling development because it is across that southern border of Texas that much of this is taking place. And
it is huge.
I couldn't agree with you more.
We had 600 miles of border just in the Western District of Texas. And it was a huge problem already, but now it is just beyond comprehension, and we have got to secure our borders. If we can't secure our borders, we have no national security at all.
Yeah. You know, what's happening with this invasion, as I call it, makes, you know, a complete mockery of the administration's contention that the border is more secure than ever. It certainly isn't, and certainly not satisfactorily so.
It is an invasion. It's a calculated invasion. It's a deliberate invasion, and it is the greatest threat to national security I think we have ever seen.
Well, it certainly is at the moment of grave, grave concern. Let me turn in the last couple of minutes we have with you, Sidney Powell, to kind of the bottom line of your book, Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. What recommendations do you have, particularly for the public at large, as they come to grips with this reality that the rule of law is being imperiled? What can we do about it?
There are a number of things we can do about it, starting from the importance of individual jury service, because as Judge William Young says in Massachusetts, the individual juror is the last bastion of democracy. A single juror can stop an unjust criminal conviction. And we should welcome our opportunity to serve on juries, to the fact that legislation will be introduced in and has been pending in Congress to mandate fairness and disclosure of evidence by the prosecution. There's legislation to put an inspector general over the Department of Justice, and he needs mandatory authority to review whatever needs to be reviewed going on there. Of course, the Department of Justice vehemently opposes that, but everyone can call their senators and congressmen and demand accountability and passage of that legislation. voters can be more attuned to electing their judges and district attorneys and insist that they be fair and willing to conduct cases according to law and enforce the law. And basically, we just all need to be as informed as we can about what's going on and demand that the rule of law be followed until we can vote out everybody that has anything to do with not applying the law.
Yeah. You mentioned in your book the ultimate court, perhaps, in which this kind of conduct has to be exposed and corrected is not actually part of the judicial system at all, but rather the court of public opinion.
That's exactly right.
Just talk a little bit about how that can be. I mean, you've given us some suggestions about ways in which as voters and as jurors and so on, but this requires first and foremost, of course, that the public be informed about the problem that that you've addressed in your book. And it's so important, a corrective, a license to lie exposing corruption in the Department of Justice. Are there specific things that, armed with the evidence in your book, that you think people could do in the court of public opinion to help raise this alarm in a higher way?
Yes. I mean, it's something that everybody needs to be informed about. That's why I wrote the book in the style of a legal thriller with a narrative that everyone can understand. You don't have to be a lawyer to understand, read, or appreciate the book at all. And once we are informed, then we can speak out at every level, state, county, United States, across the board, to demand that everyone in public position follow the law and enforce the laws that are there.
And their oaths of office to do just that, not least. And that's, I guess, in a way, maybe our last point, is I am struck by the extent to which, and you've documented it in a very readable way, Sidney Powell, that we have, in fact, now for years been subjected to this sort of ideological agenda that has trumped not only the rule of law, but the personal oaths of office that individuals from the president on down have taken. And this is the ultimate corruption, if you will, and the ultimate threat, it seems to me, to our rule of law. Last closing thought, very quickly.
I really appreciate your having me on the show, Frank. I just want everyone to know that they can participate to make the system better. We must demand integrity and fairness and adherence to the rule of law from all of our officials at every level.
Amen. An excellent closing point. And to just drive it home further, all of us are at risk if that rule of law, in fact, is allowed to go over the side. Sidney Powell, thank you for this alarming but very necessary awakening sound, a klaxon, if you will, to all of us. Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. Thank you for your service in that department in the past and, of course, the work that you're doing now in the criminal defense system. Keep up that good work and come back to us. I hope you will in the future. We hope the rest of you will come back to us again next week. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afty. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.